Last time on Star Trek Voyager.
What the hell is it?
A transwarp aperture. It's less than a light year from Earth.
How many Borg vessels?
We can't get a clear reading, but the graviton emissions are off the scale.
I want every ship in range to converge on those coordinates now.
Yes, Admiral.
Hull breaches on deck 6 through 12.
I can't stay ahead of them, Captain.
The armor is failing.
Where's the nearest aperture?
Approximately 30 seconds ahead. But it leads back to the Delta Quadrant.
Mr. Paris, prepare to adjust your heading.
Yes, ma'am.
Got 18 ships in position. 9 more on the way.
Open a channel.
Open, sir.
This is Admiral Paris. Use all necessary force. I repeat, all necessary force.
Sir, there's a vessel coming through.
Mr. Paris, what's our position?
Right where we expect it to be.
The transwarp network has been obliterated, Captain.
We'll celebrate later. Mr. Tuvok.
Cease fire!
Did it.
We're being hailed.
On screen. Sorry to surprise you. Next time we'll call ahead.
Welcome back.
It's good to be here.
How did you?
It'll all be in my report, sir.
I look forward to it.
Thanks for your help, Admiral Janeway.
Sick bay to the bridge. Doctor to Lieutenant Paris. There's someone here who'd like to say hello.
You better get down there, Tom.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chakotay, the helm.
Aye, Captain.
Set a course for home.
Now, the conclusion.
The order setting a course for home caused her voice to waver. Tension on the bridge eased, encouraging crew to relax. Emotions transferred to her chair as she sat, allowing her to face forward, breathe, and savor their return. Be emotional later. Catherine remembered the last times she saw her homeworld. Q presented it, and Captain Braxton denied it. One man teased, another quoted a directive. A temporal prime directive now smashed to smithereens. Both people might have delivered Voyager before today. She understood she'd do it twice. Did this mean Q and the timeship relativity? Understand the conclusion to this 7-year journey? Neither stopped Admiral Janeway altering the timeline. Why? Through inaction, did both time travelers enable this violation? She stopped second-guessing. Temporal mechanics and anticipating the whims of an omnipotent being mattered less. The mental gymnastics distorted everyone's effort, she concluded they knew. Catherine looked at the view screen, witnessing sunlight cast over her state of Indiana. Home never appeared so vibrant. Thoughts switched to her mother, Sister Phoebe and Molly, her Irish setter. Everyone in Bloomington, awake and in transporter range. No more borrowed minutes over a long-range communications array. The welcomed ship cruised on impulse towards Earth as chunks of comm traffic from multiple Federation ships swamped ops. A jubilant Ensign Kim, with tears, knocked his captain out of cerebration.
Captain, we're receiving hails from the fleet and Earth stations.
She shifted the lump of emotion still in her throat.
No doubt, Ensign. Who knows our friends wanting to congratulate us on those vessels?
Ensign Kim nodded, growing younger. His zest for returning home never faltered. He smiled, weeping, as screen readouts overwhelmed his ability to respond. As Earth orbit neared, the USS Bonchoon's captain inquired how Voyager arrived inside a Borg sphere. Other Federation vessels lingered where Voyager appeared and scanned the debris for technology worth salvaging. Janeway knew several officers on board their escorts. She wrapped the arms of her chair, deciding on who to hail first.
Harry, send out a general hail thanking everyone. I'm sure we'll pay each other a visit soon.
Yes, Captain.
Catherine realized after remarking to her operations officer she'd need preparation time for the onslaught of debriefings. Starfleet headquarters is a hive of rigid, perfectly arranged, musty admiral's offices. Catherine reconsidered the circumstances with their return and half-desired, skipping to the frontier again. She bit her lip, indulging in dark, sarcastic thoughts. The grateful vessel hailed a rushed fleet of ships arranged by Admiral Paris, thanking them. Other vessels arriving late to the Borg engagement expected conflict, not a reunion. For those crews on incoming ships, today almost became the Battle of Sector 001. Again. Harry observed the splendid collection of Federation starships. He wondered who would be more awestruck, Tom or himself. Eyes wiped dry, he looked around the bridge. Emotional relief drenched crewmates. Instead of decades, family gatherings were hours away. The unfathomable distance traveled, disorientated expectations. Harry glanced at Tuvok, straight-faced as ever, tapping commands into his console. The Vulcan could reason on family or security reports. His posture reflected nothing of today's milestone. A small, genuine smile existed on Seven's face, but Harry lacked Tuvok's perceptive skills. Besides an aunt on Earth, who else did Seven have? In these past 4 years, Voyager cultivated her only family relationships. He wondered about the life choices she'd make. Ensign Kim couldn't spy his commander's face as he stood at ops, his superior piloted in silence. Voyager's first officer possessed ideas Ensign Kim couldn't perceive as entering orbit became palpable. Chakotay stared at his tribe's homeworld, contemplating Maquis history. Such concerns didn't stab at him when planning their arrival. Travel between quadrants in an instant reframed perspectives. The caretaker's displacement wave and a Borg conduit provided tidy, ironic bookends. It's normal for starships to embark on 5 or 8 year deep space missions. He speculated if this crew's 7 year journey symbolized a real difference in hindsight. Peculiar sensations caused him to flare his nostrils and breathe through his nose. This technique allowed for clarity and focus on an old life thought lost. A potential to discover old friends, restore relationships, became attainable and material again. The view screen, sprinkled with a dozen starships encircling Voyager, provoked. He wondered if his terrorist cell mattered, if everyone arrived a decade later without Admiral Janeway's help. Seven needed consideration, and tugging on Maquis threads should wait. Better to ask if she wished to travel with him, or if she desired staying Earthbound first. Tomorrow didn't require writing crew evaluations or eating replicator rations. Tomorrow turned uncertain. Ensign Culhane entered the bridge and relieved him of helm control. For a moment, he imagined security officers beaming aboard under orders to secure him in the brig. Chakotay returned to his command seat. He glanced at Seven. His eyes welcomed her attention. Chair leather cushioning his hands felt cool after she answered his look with a smile. Catherine sensed Chakotay's comfort, leaned across, grinning, and said he had the bridge.
I'm going to visit B'Elanna and Voyager's second child.
Thank you. Thank you for downloading Season 8 of Star Trek Voyager, where the journey continues. Please note this podcast supports chapters for convenient listening. Thanks goes to memoryalpha.com for help with researching Star Trek canon. Sound files sourced with thanks from trekcore.com and Two Sober Dwarves Productions. Story ideas were discussed on Reddit in r/Daystrom Institute. If you'd like to donate, check the show notes. I have a $2 Patreon offering extras. I would also love your support to make the animated episode a reality. If anybody is interested in assisting with the production, they can. We need editors, writers, animators, and voice actors. Please email me for more info.
Captain Janeway marched under instinct to sickbay, as though Voyager remained at red alert. Heightened circumstances on board, masqueraded as an emergency. Anticipation towards greeting Belana's baby, and the miracle with finishing 7 years of journeying, provoked to hasten her stride. Crew members passing in corridors provided further confirmation of Voyager's arrival.
"Oh, Captain, thank you,"
said Crewman Gilmore.
"We're back."
Security Officer Anderson shook her fist at shoulder height. Both knew better than to stop their superior. They shared their gratitude, continuing with assigned duties. Sickbay doors sliced open, but the busy medical bay lay bereft of life.
"Kathy, my dear."
Catherine swung around, Q rested in a lavish pose over the doctor's desk. When Janeway paused, mouth agape, Q bolted and approached. He carried the pad from their last encounter, referencing it with his finger.
"It came to be quite a merry-go-round across the galaxy.
Q finished gesturing and flung the pad behind him. It disappeared before hitting the carpet.
"I knew both Mummy and Grandmummy had it in hers. Everyone safe and sound? Ready for shore leave on this dreary backwater? Prepped for plenty of boring meetings?"
Q exaggerated a yawn.
"Yet pity about your engineer. Joe...
Q clicked his fingers 3 times, forgetting Joe's second name.
"Q."
She raised a hand, pushing away, guarding her personal space. He deflected her irritation with a flash of his palms.
"This isn't the worst time, but it's not the best time either."
Close enough, his eye level lowered. Q stepped forward.
"Oh, but it is. While you're busy with your visit to this blue speck of dust, I thought I'd share a special, quick, heartfelt congratulations."
Q gestured where he remembered the human heart lived. Janeway held her hips, in defense against his typical verboseness.
"While I am grateful for your assistance, is this a quick visit?"
"Well, yes, I left my boy unsupervised. I wanted this private minute, before your lives change again. Let's reaffirm the mutual respect and adoration we have for one another."
Catherine judged Q's cryptic, celebratory mood as positive but confusing.
"I won't be the only one to miss you, Kathy. Junior and I, we're trying to make our father-son thing work."
"That's great, Q,"
she acknowledged with gentle assurance.
"Let me attend to my family, and you yours."
Catherine spoke with deceptive teeth. Q understood, but what is a forced smile as a hint to leave to an ageless, godlike entity?
"Of course, my dear. Congratulations again on the double Janeway wow factor. Can't say I enjoy her Borg Highness not as scintillating as you. And I don't think even Jean-Luc could bring this kind of triumph home."
Q held the woman with a sincere hug and pulled away before Catherine looked uncomfortable.
"You're very happy when you're beautiful."
He blew a kiss and vanished. As Q flashed out of sight, the doctor flashed in front of her, smiling with maximum bravado.
"Well, Captain, I'm 2 for 2 with the new Voyager crew."
Those Q returned acted unknowing of his interference. Catherine set aside his visit and focused her attention on family. A delighted Tom and B'Elanna watched her sidestep another obstacle. The cheerful hologram praised himself and didn't register her lack of interest towards his new godfather status.
Congratulations, B'Elanna. Do you have a name?
We've decided on Miral after my mother.
I thought you might.
She leaned into B'Elanna, holding Miral, and caressed the baby's soft hand. Everyone's view met.
Well, the timing is fortunate.
Their captain rose and announced their arrival as the best present they could hope for their burgeoning family. A thought triggered Tom into action and looked with owl-wide eyes at both women.
My dad, Miral's grandfather, will be here any minute.
Correct, Lieutenant, but please stay here. Enjoy your parental leave.
She hugged Miral's parents and said she would visit again. She turned to the doctor.
When you're finished, come and find me.
The EMH stopped tidying his equipment.
Captain, where are you going?
I might be rusty with Starfleet procedures, but flag officers are boarding.
Project Pathfinder informed Starfleet Command of X-Borg drones, serving as crew. Janeway wanted to curate their reaction. Catherine brought herself within speaking distance by tapping her comm badge.
Janeway to Seven and Janeway to Icheb. Please meet me in Astrometrics.
Doors parted, and both individuals strode through. Their entry appeared choreographed. Janeway watched Earth signal a vibrancy she relearned an appreciation for from the astrometric screen. Her attention drifted towards planetary traffic, Earth Station McKinley, and Starbase One, floating like moths around a lamp. It allowed for a meditative second, soothing thoughts before a storm of Starfleet personnel placed boots on deck.
Hello, Icheb. Glad you came.
Icheb acknowledged with a youthful grin, unconcerned with the view. Seven said they would enter orbit in 2 minutes. Janeway thanked her and addressed them.
I called you here because, well...
She referred to the massive display with a slight movement of her hand. Icheb stared while Janeway continued.
As a natural consequence, admirals, the engineering corps, and families will flood Voyager, wreaking emotional and technical havoc on this ship.
Catherine pulled her uniform straight.
This is important. Our guests won't know you like we do. Forgive any misunderstandings.
Informed by his academic studies, Icheb inquired.
Because the Borg incurred on Federation space, the Battle of Sector 001.
Seven's posture tightened.
Are we to assume hostility?
No, I dare say anything like that, but reminding others you were also victims may be necessary.
Seven regarded her captain's endorsement as adequate and relaxed her chest.
You have earned the trust of this crew many times. Starfleet knows, even if they express hesitations, but you'll have our support. Especially after these past few days.
Catherine rubbed her forehead and stopped crossing her arms in defense against the work to finish.
In the meantime, I'll inform Chakotay. He will prepare you both for your first briefing.
Icheb and Seven allowed themselves a smile in acknowledgement and assessed their workstations. Their unofficial guardian exited for her next destination. Federation starships dispersed and resumed their original assignments. Newer vessels arrived into the system, hung motionless, and warped away. Others remained in orbit. The USS Voyager, NCC 74656, returned to Starfleet's nest. No longer a chick, she came home to roost. Her cold, uranium hull basked in planet Earth's warm glow. Space stations and orbital platforms acted in usual calm over humanity's homeworld. Inside the Intrepid-class ship, her crew weren't entitled to such tranquility. Sensors showed two shuttlecraft breaking free of Earth's gravity. One carried Admiral Owen Paris. The flag officer declined the transporter. He flew past Voyager, inspecting the ship. Owen Paris acknowledged the miracle and placed himself in front of her as though to spy his son by a window. A smile grew as sunlight reflected from Voyager and entered the shuttle's cabin. Project Pathfinder's original mission began as a means to track a lone vessel. Today, the assignment evolved with accepting her return. The older gentleman and a Lieutenant Commander Barclay gazed.
Remarkable,
Barclay said to himself. He noted various Borg modifications stitched into the hull. Owen overheard and transferred his relief to a man entrusted with bringing his son and former XO back. A Bolian male stood against the mess hall windows, swaying. Intense activity surrounding the ship excited him. On a child's first encounter with a Bolian, they could mistake Crewman Chell as originating from Earth. In simple terms, a blue round man came from a blue round planet. Skin texture mimicked hues of Hawaiian water mixed with foam from ocean waves. But Chell's abrasive conversational style nullified his calming appearance because he opinionated on any topic, as did any native from Bolaris 9. If Elorians are the listeners of the galaxy, Bolians are the talkers. Therefore, Bolians never become decent counselors. Luckily for Voyager's crew, only two Bolians travelled on board, while marooned 70,000 light-years away. Chell's forceful, conversational nature enabled a quick transfer into Neelix's galley. This, despite a personnel report cataloguing his unreliability and disruptiveness. His traits overlapped with Neelix's. It's assumed his ascendancy to ship's cook succeeded because of his confidence. Despite initial skepticisms, he proved his culinary skills equaled Neelix's and surprised crewmates.
Now I won't have that.
Captain and Commander made eye contact. They underestimated how much this role meant, with witnessing him slump forward, elbows on table, hands holding his bald face. Voyager's refit meant reinstalling mess hall food replicators. He couldn't remain tethered to his inheritance.
These meals allowed me to express my untapped artistry.
Janeway devised a solution to lift spirits. Use remaining fresh food and organize one last dinner, a Delta dinner, as she described it. The Bolian spread his palms, revealing an excited blue smile tinged with pink gums.
Imagine this honor, starting a new culinary career, having cooked for Starfleet Command.
The dinner served crew members' families, not Starfleet Command. Catherine stressed she'd assign assistance, but her words flew over strengthened ambitions. In anticipation of Starfleet's intentions, she asked Chell to prepare food samples for study and synthesis.
Permission to leave, Captain?
She smiled and blinked, yes, not expecting an immediate response to her orders. Catherine pivoted in the chair and faced Chakotay.
This crew has almost thanked me in every corridor and turbo lift since leaving the bridge.
This is thanks to you both.
He flicked eyebrows, heaping praise, but her pained smile acknowledged Admiral Janeway's sacrifice.
In one way, the Admiral never returned home. Her thoughts stayed on us to deliver us home.
Harry and I can speak with experience to that.
Catherine let his comment remain as last words on the topic, and believed any crew member, given a chance, would express solidarity and tackle how to bring everyone back, whatever the cost. She reached for her mouth and broke the silence.
I have to stop smiling. It hurts.
Chakotay didn't respond. He stared and smiled. She massaged her pained jawline.
What are your thoughts, Commander?
Well, do you need a coffee? Second, I wanted to sit here. Savor this moment before our incoming storm. You deserve that sore mouth for these next few days.
I don't...
The man of light and photons waltzed into the mess hall as her comm badge chirped. Tuvok's electronic voice filled the empty dining room.
Bridge to Captain Janeway. Admiral Paris is about to board.
Thank you. On my way.
Before the doctor could speak, Janeway pounced.
Doctor, you're with us to Shuttle Bay 1.
He opened his jaw to close it again. Q's visit flashed in her thoughts. When events settled, she'd tell Chakotay.
I'm not drinking any more replicated coffee. I want real beans.
Chakotay shoulder-nudged the aficionado.
Maybe Admiral Patterson will deliver some. Surely he'll visit.
Catherine placed her hand on her belly, hopeful about his remark. She also fancied presenting Patterson with a pop quiz. The EMH, ready to dismiss the prize of coffee, recalled his one time eating food and neglected interrupting their conversation. Captain Janeway informed the doctor Tom would supervise Belana. He needed to accompany her. Then Owen Paris could tackle his reconciliation in private.
Well, if I'm greeting the Admiral again, I need to look my best.
An effortless transition reskinned his attire to the modern grey / blue formal dress uniform.
Most appropriate, wouldn't you say?
Wait, when do we get our new uniforms?
She chose not to entertain his mock jealous tone and let the EMH have this moment. She waved a hand, signaled an okay, and rolled her eyes. Crewmen hurried into formation as the trio entered the shuttle bay. Voyager's doctor received quizzical glances from others stood in line. He translated their interest as him dressing the best. The first craft entered through the force field and landed. A second shuttle followed. An unwanted pause hung in the air for those assembled. Side doors opened from both auxiliary vessels. A bosun's whistle blew, honoring Voyager's first visiting admiral since leaving for the Badlands. Admiral Owen Paris stepped out, head carried high with a smile held higher. As did another admiral, Janeway didn't recognize, followed by Lieutenant Commander Barclay. The second ship included an engineering crew. Those personnel formed a line behind Admiral Paris as he prepared first words. Catherine reckoned the venerable man escaped from the shuttlecraft with a vigor identical to an Academy cadet marathon runner reacting to a starter's pistol. Admiral Owen Paris marched with the warmest grin, prepared. Disregarding Starfleet protocols, he opened his arms wide enough to catch two Catherines as he narrowed the gap between them.
Captain Catherine Janeway, you gave us a welcome surprise today.
You should know Voyager, sir. A mysterious disappearance has to have an equal in magnitude reappearance.
He straightened and patted her uniform shoulders.
Either way, that docking bay, we kept it open for you, like you asked.
Large hands pulled her in for another hug.
There's no view screen or geodesic fold between us now, Kathy.
As two old crewmates from the USS Albertani embraced, her senior whispered,
"You got Starfleet's attention again, and I'm still eager to know how you did it."
Voyager and shuttle crews remained in formation on either side of the embraced pair like a number 11. Owen stopped squeezing his former science officer and instructed everyone to stand at ease.
"I will keep this brief. I'm not here to make an impressive speech, only a heartfelt one. Standing here with you all is wonderful. We've already started contacting your families. You'll all be home soon. Welcome back."
When flag officers visit, concern followed. This crew relaxed. Many in line beamed smiles at the visiting contingent. Naomi felt her mother's grip tighten around her hand. She looked up, and Samantha Wildman's spare hand trapped tears. The Admiral's words strengthened the culmination of Catherine's promise to get her crew home. She looked along the line, introducing senior staff.
"Hello, Commanders. Good to meet you in the flesh."
Chakotay, Tuvok, and Ensign Kim shook palms.
I believe you know my chief medical officer.
"Ah, yes, and Voyager's resident author. Well met again."
He congratulated and noted his uniform. The EMH expressed a small bow with a cautionary
"Admiral"
as acknowledgement. Pathfinder's project head walked along the line and noticed one crew member younger than everyone else. He knelt and spoke at eye level with Naomi Wildman.
"Is this the famous captain's assistant I've heard so much about?"
"Yes, I am, sir. So please don't be afraid to ask for anything. I'm very experienced with making command-level decisions."
The oldest-looking person Naomi had ever met laughed out loud. Years passed since a child spoke in his presence. He steadied himself from his crouch as he spoke.
"I'm sure, and I'll accept your offer if your mother permits it."
He clutched Ensign Wildman's hand harder than she did her daughter's.
"Well done. Raising a captain alone couldn't have been easy."
Samantha recovered against unexpected, honest affection.
"My especially large family helps."
Shipmates in earshot smiled. Recycled air in Voyager's shuttle bay warmed with joy. A collective emotional weight, with no longer being alone, flew from their breath. Tuvok and Vorik stood unfazed with the emotions encircling them. Owen Paris scanned through the crowd. Catherine stopped him.
"Admiral, your son is in sickbay with Voyager's second child."
Shock restrained his throat and swallowed through a closed mouth smile.
"Right, before we have a tour, I have some introductions."
He directed with a thick arm.
"I believe everyone knows Mr. Barclay."
"Hello, Captain,
Catherine extended her hand.
"Thank you, Reg, for making our journey less lonely."
Well, Captain, I'm only due. It's my job."
She spied nervous energy and gripped his arm, steadying their handshake.
"Oh, I'd say you did more than that. You made our lives so much easier these past few years. Take credit from your effort."
Thank you, Captain Janeway."
Chakotay and Harry commended the worrisome man. Tuvok nodded approval.
"This is Admiral Carter Mitchell, also with Project Pathfinder."
A dark-skinned man, similar height to Admiral Paris, but without the bulk and elderliness, approached. Warmth and a little less authority emanated. Janeway sensed a weariness from him and shook hands.
"Pleasure, Admiral."
While Mitchell mirrored her sentiment, a thought jumped to Admiral Patterson, a step up in seriousness compared, and a complete puppy after breaking through his sharp exterior.
"And this is a professor of engineering, Miles O'Brien from Starfleet Academy, here to offer help on Borg technology." Professor O'Brien served on the Enterprise-D during its encounter with the first Borg cube.
Miles O'Brien rushed in.
Hello, Captain. We've met before.
She waited for an old memory from 7 years ago to resurface.
Oh?
O'Brien elaborated how after the Enterprise, he transferred to DS9 as their chief of operations and said they met in Ops when she visited. Janeway replied with an Irish saying,
May your home always be too small to hold all your friends.
Miles threw his eyes around the shuttle bay.
Aye, Voyager and Earth are small enough.
Catherine invited everyone into their conversation and raised her voice.
We traveled 70,000 light years, and the world is smaller with unknown friends already.
She told O'Brien her family had descended from the O'Donnell clan.
Of course.
Celtic bonds took root. Miles grew a cheeky grin, and with a warm touch, Janeway inquired about Commander Sisko. Not expecting the question, he paused, lifting his eyebrows.
Commander Sisko? Oh, he became captain a few years ago. Looked great last I saw him.
Good. I hope to see him again. But first, Ensign Wildman, she'd like to meet you.
You served with Greskren Trek, my husband.
His thumb and index finger pressed his temples, coaxing the memory out.
You're Samantha. Greskren Trek is a good man.
We know.
Samantha Wildman giggled with Naomi.
Let's talk more later.
Janeway noticed Barclay raise a hand.
I served with Miles before. As soon as you arrived, I contacted the professor with Admiral Paris's permission. Miles' experience will be most helpful.
Duly noted, Commander. Thank you. Admiral, if our new friends don't need us, I believe we have other parts of Voyager to inspect.
Owen's spine stiffened, understanding the implication, and followed as she addressed his companions.
Gentlemen, you may speak to Commander Chakotay for your needs. Also, we're arranging a small function in our mess hall. It's your only chance to sample handmade Delta Quadrant food.
Professor O'Brien lifted his forehead, happy at the offer. Paris and Janeway exited the shuttle bay as crews mingled. Admiral Mitchell tasked Voyager's department heads with beginning the equipment and technology transfer, while the EMH beelined towards Reginald and O'Brien.
Reg, good to see you again.
Hello, Doctor. Welcome to the Alpha Quadrant again. Your new uniform looks great.
Wait, this is a Mark 1 EMH. I didn't think Intrepid-class starships had hollow emitters ship-wide.
Reginald Barclay understood Miles's confusion.
You're right, they don't. Suffice to say, Voyager's Mark 1 evolved with a greater set of abilities. The Doctor has developed into an LMH via some clever engineering, and a mobile hollow emitter that can...
A mobile emitter?
O'Brien squinted at the metal pick-shaped device on his arm.
It's 29th century technology.
The Doctor added, verbalizing pride while showing his arm. The curly-haired man, alive with interest, zoomed in for a closer look.
It gives me the freedom to go anywhere.
The Doctor continued.
What's taking him so long?
The newborn in his arms caused no lapse in thought for Thomas, Eugene, Paris. Tom counted 15 minutes as passing since Harry whispered over the comm, saying the admirals had boarded. He calculated the travel time for his dad to join them. It required exiting the transporter room on deck 4, riding a turbo lift, one floor, and then taking a few steps to reach sickbay. Harry, in his haste, neglected telling Tom, Owen Paris arrived via shuttlecraft. Voyager's helmsman, unrecognizable from his previous job as an ex-con, toiling in New Zealand. After 7 years piloting the furthest regions of space, falling in love, marrying, this day launched him into fatherhood, and his dad marched the corridors. Not any dad, an admiral, known throughout the service for discipline and adherence to regulations. He stood by the biobed, where his wife lay, acting as a shield from sickbay doors. Belana's slight bedridden smile and his daughter's existence couldn't calm him. Belana spent energy giving birth while under Borg attack. She earned parental leave crossing galactic quadrants in labor. Tom waited to justify his. This reckoning ended today. If Voyager didn't return, the man gripping the biobed might have escaped fate, but how would not making amends be intuited? Easier to evade the Borg than escaping a father's judgment. Personal entanglements demanded more emotional energy than ship-to-ship combat.
He smiled at me on the view screen. That wasn't for show.
You're smiling at our daughter. That isn't for show, is it?
It isn't the same. She doesn't understand what a smile is.
Don't be brain dead. Your father smiled.
You understand that?
Of course I do, it's just...
Tom interpreted Miral's fresh face as having taken her mother's side and slumped against the wall.
Just what? Uncomfortable? Please, you're talking to me. I've just given birth, or hadn't you noticed?
Which the doc gave you medication for. At least you opened a comm line with your family.
B'Elanna listened, sensing unnecessary desperation.
You're worried, I understand that.
Her combative nature acquiesced, for the baby's sake.
Do you remember your father said he was proud when we first contacted Starfleet?
I remember.
While Tom shared doubts cuddling Miral, medical bay doors hissed. Admiral Paris and Captain Janeway entered. Consoled by Janeway's smile, Tom noticed she'd shrunk in Owen's presence. Their grinning faces confused him. Janeway saw both men stiffen and performed her best to minimize the uncertainty.
Admiral Paris, I present your son, Thomas Paris.
The tyrannical man from his childhood acknowledged Janeway with a soft, slight smile, nodding.
Thank you, Catherine. We'll catch up and make more speeches later.
She reciprocated and granted everyone privacy. Voyager required tending to.
Gentlemen.
His father approached and shared a gentle...
Hello?
And addressed B'Elanna by name, not rank. Owen asked the baby's name. Tom turned 16 again and abided as instructed when questioned by a family senior.
Miral?
Owen inched closer, evaluating his granddaughter's head ridges. His lips twitched.
Miral Paris. She'll make a beautiful addition to our Paris family.
His father mushed words. Tom forgot when he last heard his dad speak so warmly. Miral's parents had never said her full name out loud. A tear formed on Owen's face. B'Elanna asked for Miral, freeing his limbs to perform his duty as a son. Voyager's best pilot didn't imagine this old man's reaction as he opened his arms. Broader shoulders grabbed him faster than he anticipated. With approximately an O'Kumpan's lifetime spent aboard Voyager, Tom fostered close relationships with shipmates. Hugs came easy. Who do admirals hug, besides Janeway? This man of great import, who remained tough and remote throughout Paris Junior's childhood, almost collapsed in his presence. He held the law-enforcing figure, the one scolding him from his younger years, who used to shout,
"Crying is a sign of weakness."
Owen Paris embraced this weakness. Tom remembered his dad's smile from the viewscreen and understood he had shown anxiety. As he held his father without tears, his neck received a hot breath of words.
I love you.
If this man dressed him down for insolence, he envisioned himself sniveling like a kid. He glimpsed at the biobed's occupants. B'Elanna widened her eyes, urging her husband, while Miral rested in her arms. She stayed silent to the affair unraveling. A 7-year absence regained its heft, but Voyager's initial loss, then rediscovery, placed an emotional strain on Paris Senior. Like piloting a shuttle careening into a moon, thinking this is life's end, only to regain control and pull away in the final seconds. Sometimes with another chance, it's more difficult. Owen lifted his head off Tom's damp shoulder, wiped away tears, and faced his progeny. While reasserting himself, he expressed through a sore throat and the heat of crying. Owen caught a breath.
My boy, I'm proud with what you've accomplished. You don't know how much I mean that.
Dad, I know I'm...
Let me say this.
An admiral stopped his son from speaking and clamped on his son's shoulders, and Tom, on instinct, agreed like a teenage boy again.
I'm beyond our history. These past few years, discharged from Starfleet, the Maquis, the penal colony, I'm just grateful you're here. I've always loved you. I'll make amends.
Dad... We'll make amends together.
Both men hugged, this time gentler. Tom glanced at B'Elanna. His anxiety had disappeared. He winked, signaled an all clear, but she already knew.
I'd like to welcome you all home by keeping your first briefing light.
The crowd in the shuttle bay chuckled. Chakotay smirked, but doubted his sincerity. He waited for the antagonism to show itself. Admiral Paris provided operational oversight, where Admiral Mitchell's duties lay in resource management, logistics, procurement, and oversaw the Midas Array. Today, Starfleet tasked Mitchell with transferring Voyager's inventory. He hosted the briefing in the shuttle bay. His deft leadership style enabled asking quick procedural questions. A Vulcan lieutenant, equal age to Vorix, recorded the minutes. Chakotay heard the aide performing entries in his pad while paying attention to any subtleties in Mitchell's behavior. He lacked pomp and sting in this discussion, showing disinterest towards those Maquis present. Chakotay's time instructing at Starfleet Academy delivered constant engagements with obstinate admirals. His hidden wariness during this meeting stemmed from a communique 2 years earlier. His captain let him view a message sent by Admiral Hayes from a data stream.
I just listened to a communique from Admiral Hayes.
Nice to have friends in high places.
Voyager's first officer never met Hayes, even though Hayes spent his career being shuttled around Earth and Federation core worlds. He specialized in attending conferences, writing reports, anything involving comfy desks. Admiral Hayes's directives always resulted in being unsympathetic to the colonies bordering Cardassian space. Admiral Nechayev, while no friend, at least visited the DMZ. Chakotay didn't mean to compare admirals, but the ancient communique irked him today. The video started with mundane updates.
Hello, Captain. I hope this message finds you well. From what I understand, it has not been easy. But I want you to know that a lot of people here are very proud of what you've accomplished. I also want to assure you that we have not given up finding a way to get you home. We've redirected two deep space vessels toward your position. If all goes well, they could rendezvous with you in the next 5 to 6 years.
Janeway skipped to a time index in the recording, expressing concern about the reference to the Maquis.
Computer, advance to time index 121.4.
Admirals like Hayes intended to imprison them all and had ignored how well this group aboard Voyager conducted themselves.
When you respond to this message, please let us know of any casualties. I'm sure you've had more than your share. I'm anxious to know the status of your crew, the Maquis, first contacts that you've made, interactions with the Borg. But there'll be time for everything. Our thoughts are with you. Talk to you soon.
2 years ago, thoughts of a stodgy admiral, thousands of light years away, couldn't bother him. His collection of Maquis lived outside Starfleet's reach. He recalled saying in that moment the issue could be dealt with later.
What?
Status of the Maquis.
Do you find that surprising?
I don't think of you, Orbelana, or the others as Maquis. I think of you as part of my crew.
You may have forgotten, but we haven't. You heard the Admiral. It'll be years before we have to deal with those issues. Let's worry about it then.
High emotions in Shuttle Bay 1 distracted shipmates. Those in attendance didn't perceive his deceptive thoughts. No one watched the tattooed Terror's focused presence, nerves primed since shuttles docked. The boxer in him expected an opponent to make his entry and throw first punches. Even though Admiral Hayes had died before Voyager returned, he symbolized a combative element among Starfleet top brass. Chakotay held the highest position of Free Maquis. This meant responsibilities fell on him. But he realized Mitchell wasn't his adversary. Chakotay reconsidered his level of apprehension, but couldn't shake the notion somebody could come for him. Mitchell restated how Project Pathfinder contacted their families and should make their way to Earth. To secure key areas, he assigned extra security personnel to Tuvok. The vessel fell under the purview of his office, and as Voyager's department heads shared smaller items from to-do lists, personnel acknowledged their orders and scattered. The ranking officer raised his voice against the background chatter.
Commander.
Yes, sir.
We have a meeting with your captain. Can we...
Yes, sir. I'll catch up.
Chakotay nodded at Harry, and Ensign Kim offered the way for the VIP and his aide.
Let me escort you, Admiral.
Mitchell addressed Chakotay by rank, shook his hand, and congratulated him for Voyager's return. Chakotay glanced at Mitchell's deepening wrinkles and wondered if excessive stress or smiling had defined them. With the bay emptying, Chakotay looked for the EMH, but he had already left with Mr. Barclay and Professor O'Brien. He wondered where that powwow went. All three didn't stay for Mitchell's briefing. A calm, familiar voice entered his ears as he opened his pad.
Might I assume you weren't expecting a cordial first visit, Commander?
How could you... Yes, something like that, Tuvok.
I observed the Admiral focused on the task at hand.
Chakotay inputted commands into the pad as he listened to his security chief.
While both admirals are unconcerned with their duties in front of Maquis crewmen, your presence, orbiting Earth, will no doubt provoke a stronger reaction.
I can agree.
He wrapped his fingers against the pad's case.
If there's nothing else, Mr. Tuvok, I'm going to update our captain.
There is one thing, Commander. It's logical to assume Starfleet will bring investigations against Maquis crew members. I surmise it's already being arranged. We simply wait to be notified at our earliest inconvenience. When those hearings come, you will have my full support.
He noted Tuvok's considerations and smirked. Tuvok tilted his neck.
Curious. What gives you cause to smile?
The pad dropped to hip height.
7 years ago, Starfleet ordered you to perform cloak and dagger operations against me. You're still spying, at any rate.
These are our new circumstances. Unforeseen we would cooperate united for so long.
Tuvok straightened his posture, mirroring Chakotay's body language and blunt assessment.
If I do say so, we work well together. It will factor into my report.
Grinning at the irony, his commanding officer waved the pad, indicating his departure. Tuvok nodded.
When are you expected to be on your feet, B'Elanna?
An obvious question her captain, Chakotay, or Vorik would ask, but the casual inquiry by Tom's father made her brain blink. B'Elanna needed space to absorb the Admiral as family. Last week, she expected to raise morale on Voyager. Simple fantasies such as sharing feeding duties with Tom and Chell became impossible now. Thoughts disorientated, akin to adjusting for different time zones. Evading Cardassian patrol ships with the Maquis between planetary systems provided similar sensations. New uncertainties around Miral's upbringing carried concern. Would it happen on Earth? The alternative could have been roaming starship corridors with Naomi and Icheb for company, with Miral living a singular purpose, aiding shipmates in finishing Voyager's journey for her parents' sake. She asked herself a quick succession of questions.
Why should Miral live on board Voyager? What if I or Tom died en route? What would that mean for my daughter, with no family ties?
John Torres or Owen Paris wouldn't be alive if the ship arrived without discovering a shortcut.
What could Miral do after arriving?
No.
It's right we returned.
After leaving in disgrace the last time, B'Elanna shared no sympathy for the Alpha Quadrant, for Earth in particular. Her dad's withdrawal permitted her to ignore her human roots. The Maquis' demise and her mother's death further emphasized the lack of benefits with returning. These quick, successive thoughts reframed her life's purpose, and it wasn't enough or possible to continue the engineer's life in Starfleet. Laden with conflicting ideas, she made a mental note to ask for Tom's and Chakotay's opinion later, after peeling herself off the biobed. She hated lying there, but it granted time to think.
The doctor said, "I can resume my duties in 2 days, Admiral."
Oh, no. First, you don't get to address me as Admiral.
With Owen's manner candid, he waved his finger, admonishing like a grandfather would, but in a joking way.
Not for my daughter-in-law. Let's not cite rank today. It's Owen, when in front of Miral. Please.
B'Elanna dealt her father-in-law a bright smile.
Second, as I told our captain, everyone from Voyager who wants it is on 4 months shore leave.
Tom uncrossed his arms.
4 months?
Well, yes, what did you expect? A quick chat with the old man, some personnel transfers, and another assignment next week?
Well, since you put it like that...
Tom leant his backside on an available biobed. B'Elanna understood him as acclimating as well.
Once my staff finish, Voyager is in for refitting.
By the manner Tom's eyes widened at his dad's decrees, B'Elanna wondered if he enacted the same mental calculations and concluded his mobile home, lost. Though warned about his father, she considered his manner cordial. Human fathers usually soften up once they meet their grandchildren, and are virtually Klingon in their relief, knowing the bloodline will continue.
Bottom line, we'll list Voyager as inactive while bringing her up to modern Starfleet specs. A lot's happened these last 7 years.
A back muscle twitched. Miral lay still on her chest as she adjusted her position for better pain relief.
At the very least, we need a baryon sweep.
No doubt. So we have some work to do.
Owen wrapped his knuckles on the biobed, certifying they had broken enough ice today.
Well, B'Elanna, I can see you require rest. Son, I'll inform you when I'm done with official duties.
Owen's energy transferred from his cheeks to uprightened shoulders and chin, shuffling into an admiral's posture.
Sure, Dad.
Tom attempted to hug him, but Owen cleared his throat and opened his hand for the shake, reminding him an admiral needed to march Voyager's corridors without tears. Doors hissed open as the big man stepped backwards, displaying a twitching smirk. He waved goodbye. Tom's two favorite women received smiles.
Well, I didn't expect that at all.
In a soft voice, not waking Miral, B'Elanna said,
Neither did I. He's nothing like you said.
She signaled for a kiss. Tom leaned in.
I know, and I'm glad you were here.
As much as I am glad, I feel like some of that Borg debris hit me. My back aches. Can I get some sleep? Captain's log. Stardate 55025.3. My first entry in the Alpha Quadrant. After what we've accomplished today, the crew are in high spirits. We completed our 70,000 light-year journey, but we are duty-bound for the time being. We must finish the smallest tasks to safeguard what has been our home, from home. I find myself committed to a very interesting first briefing.
30 minutes elapsed since the Admiral's shuttle docked, with extra personnel having beamed aboard. Unfamiliar technicians and equipment slid past each other in crowded corridors. Time traversing Voyager's decks lengthened. Nobody could depart Voyager and enjoy a visit to Risar or a Ferengi casino ship, yet. Before entering the conference room, Captain Janeway announced on the tannoy, shore leave, guest privileges, and a celebratory flyby over San Francisco. One more journey before resting at Utopia Planitia. Crewman Chell boasted to all entering his culinary domain. He intimated to guests how the Delta dinner featured. His posturing convinced himself the Federation president might attend.
Fresh food spoils. Antimatter fireworks will always be with us,
he declared from his galley. In the conference room, hosts arrived, making brief introductions. Chakotay had asked Seven and Icheb to prepare reports on Borg technology. He sat furthest away from the screen and hoped Starfleet wouldn't project their doubts onto them. He didn't wish them to experience the mistrust he encountered, like when he quit as Academy instructor to join the Maquis. Both admirals smirked upon learning about Voyager's bounty. When the presenters concluded their demonstration, Paris caught Janeway turning to him for his response.
Fine presentation. Thank you for sharing. Time invested into Project Pathfinder has certainly paid off. When I share this report, engineers at Starfleet will no doubt keep you busy with further questions. Well done.
Mitchell's aide made notes in his pad as Owen rubbed his neck from staring at the screen.
I want to ask a personal question, if I may.
Yes, sir.
Seven crossed her arms behind her back.
You may, Admiral.
I'm interested in knowing what you want to do now.
Captain Janeway and Commander Chakotay pulled identical faces, raising eyebrows and faced those standing.
Admiral, I wish to stay aboard Voyager. I can use my skills to assist the work crews. I have not decided on anything longer term.
Chakotay couldn't decipher her tone. Paris considered her words, and his eyes switched to Icheb.
With your permission, I will attend Starfleet Academy.
Janeway gauged the Admiral's reaction.
Yes, I received your captain's recommendation letter. I understand you've completed the Academy's entrance exam with Mr. Tuvok. I'm not against this idea, son.
Admiral Mitchell concurred.
You'll be fast-tracked with the material. You'd also be the first cadet from the Delta Quadrant.
Janeway desired clarity. She asked for privacy and thanked Icheb and Seven, asking them to help with the handover. Admiral Mitchell ordered his aide to wait outside. Admiral Paris's seated posture loosened, and he explained his fondness for Janeway's crew and thankful they nurtured his son. His department will look after Voyager in return. His voice flipped to serious, describing the gut punches the Federation and Earth endured during the Dominion War and the last Borg incursion.
Thankfully, your people experienced nothing we had to deal with. There is some fortune to your misfortune.
He motioned to Mitchell.
You see, Pathfinder separated us from what concerned other departments. They dealt with the repercussions from the war. So while we have the utmost trust and concern for your crew...
You don't speak for the rest of Starfleet.
Correct. They don't know Voyager. Command will be jittery with ex-Borg drones and Maquis on their proverbial front doorstep.
Chakotay reminded their guests the Maquis weren't a threat, and had also performed in their duties to help deal a crippling blow against the Borg. Admiral Paris allowed Janeway's first officer to speak freely.
I sympathize, but habits die hard, Commander. The previous demilitarized zone is a fresher, awkward mess for the new Cardassian government and ourselves.
Owen gestured with his large hand upon seeing Chakotay about to interrupt.
There have been new wounds cut into already open wounds. The Dominion ruined Cardassia and those former colonies. Starfleet can't predict what will happen when the DMZ, all the way to Bajor, receives news of Maquis serving...
Leaning forward, he corrected him.
We're not Maquis.
Owen allowed the declaration to diffuse itself and waited.
You don't have to tell us, son. We understand.
Chakotay recognized the impasse and relaxed. He displayed a small, appeasing smile. Paris addressed his former science officer from the USS Albertani.
Now the Borg and this crippling blow. I don't want to wait for your written report.
Catherine, kittenish, explained.
If I understand this right, the holo emitter carries your entire program, and the storage capacity must equal Voyager's.
One of many engineering questions O'Brien asked, with the EMH leaning into him as close as etiquette allowed, answering all his questions. The doctor had escorted Professor O'Brien and Commander Barclay to Holodeck 1, allowing them to examine his mobile emitter. Three men stood in a scrum, surrounding a holographic work table created for themselves. Sickbay remained out of bounds. He downloaded himself into ship systems, instead of needing both men jab at his arm.
Replication isn't possible?
An adamant O'Brien scratched his chin.
Well, at least it's provoked my conceptions about holotech.
Barclay leaned into his ex-colleague from the Enterprise, with an encouraging smile.
I'm sure you'll start something.
Do you have the specs?
Why, of course, Professor.
The digital physician bowed, enjoying the attention.
Starfleet Medical should also be this welcoming,
he thought. O'Brien dismissed with his hand.
Oh, I've never got used to Professor. Call me Miles.
Miles it is.
The EMH accepted with a smile and slight nod. O'Brien asked for his name as the Mark I clicked his emitter onto his arm.
It's a long story. Suffice to say, I don't have one yet.
The Irishman scoffed and folded his arms into his chest.
Huh. Tell me, Miles, how do you understand so much about holographic technology?
He took a deep breath.
Well, we had a Mark III at the Academy until recalled. I told them our Mark III, disused though it was, worked fine.
He leaned forward to share an extra detail.
Top brass disagreed.
And straightened his spine while reporting how engineers delivered a Mark IV, but after 5 months it was also recalled. Voyager's EMH expected stories of failures with the Mark I.
Ah, I see, and...
Well, I also worked with Dr. Zimmerman's prototype Mark II.
Miles still spoke, and the doctor's attempt at an interjection failed. Reg stood between them, silent. Excited at the recognition of his father, the doctor forced his next question.
You've worked on a Mark II?
O'Brien rested against the table unconcerned. His posture didn't acknowledge the magnitude, with having met the doctor's entire digital dynasty.
I've worked with every model.
I'm astonished. Reg, why didn't you mention this?
Reg opened his mouth, but no words exited. A nameless EMH turned to O'Brien, abuzz with more questions.
And you met Dr. Zimmerman? With another Mark I?
Sure, a bit of an awkward fella to work with. Zimmerman, I mean. His heart is in the right place, though.
That's describing him too kindly, Miles.
Reg said, while staring at his feet, pondering. The Irishman hopped from the table, moving closer.
Originally, they chose Dr. Bashir for the Mark II's appearance. Then they chose someone who looked like a bloody file clerk. It was a visual downgrade. Luckily, DS9's sickbay isn't compatible with Federation tech, so we never used one.
Yes, I met a Mark II also.
Oh, Reg, Moriarty!
Miles interrupted the doctor's story of how he rescued a Starfleet vessel from Romulan agents.
Moriarty?
The doctor furrowed his brow.
Oh, Moriarty, it hadn't entered my mind. It's been so long.
Reg lifted his head at the hollow character's mention.
We encountered a hologram modeled as an adversary to Commander Data. The Moriarty character from the Sherlock Holmes novels gained sentience and commandeered the Enterprise.
Miles laughed.
Moriarty, huh? That program is still running, right?
Barclay smiled, widening his eyes. He forgot where the cube with Moriarty and Countess Bartholomew resided.
I've heard of this Moriarty. How—
Miles interrupted again, and one-upped Reg with a story about meeting Vic Fontaine. Frustrated, and feeling like a bystander in his own conversation, he realized his self-awareness as a hologram lost its uniqueness amongst the two-man audience. The bruising to his ego lessened, knowing the holo-emitter belonged to him, and he wasn't limited to living in a cube or a replicated bar. Both environments were no better than where his program started. Miles and Reg wisecracked their recounting of hollow adventures, having never done so until today. The Doctor considered himself added to their list, while observing an excited Barclay losing his stutter. Miles turned to the holographic Doctor without paying attention to his facial expressions.
If you drop by Deep Space Nine, both of you would get on great.
With who exactly?
His reply feigned interest.
His name is Vic. Ask at Quark's bar for Holo Program Bashir 62. Don't let Quark overcharge you either.
O'Brien, stern, pointed his finger as he mentioned the Ferengi. The Doctor computed an awkward history existing between this Irishman and the proprietor. The Doctor pondered to himself.
These holograms have such illustrious names.
That's the hologram's name, Vic Fontaine,
reiterated O'Brien.
Well, if I ever make my way to DS9, I'll try to look for this Vic.
Though gracious in accepting, he wanted to dismiss this suggestion altogether, as humans were too liberal in their recommendations. Most didn't measure to the hype. Tom Paris kept doing it. The EMH indulged O'Brien.
So, what does Vic do? Is he a professional also? Or an artistic genius because he's unconstrained by the physical, like myself?
You could say so. He's a lounge singer.
He's a lounge singer?
The Doctor replied incredulously.
He's a lounge singer?
Reg said with encouragement.
He's a lounge singer.
The Doctor realized on second thought.
He's also a bloody good counselor. Uh-huh.
Admiral Paris rested his pad on the table.
There isn't a temporal prime directive, but I see no better reason for its creation after hearing your account of events. The implications are far-reaching.
Janeway watched the burly man's fingers slide the pad to Mitchell.
It's an appropriate irony, sir.
Tell temporal investigations this was predetermined.
He grinned and turned resolute.
As it stands, you've only committed a temporal violation, offset by destroying a large part of Borg infrastructure.
Janeway and Chakotay nodded together.
The Borg's intentions are clear. It's us or them. We won't lose sleep over what you accomplished today.
The Admiral referred to both Janeways, not the two officers opposite him.
In finding a shortcut, you brought back a larger issue for consideration, but you've granted us a technological edge over our adversaries, and...
And at what cost to the ethical structures that maintain her?
Posed upright in his chair, with fingers resting in the crossed position, Owen nodded. Catherine leaned in.
I decided there wasn't another way.
Admiral Mitchell responded.
For the crew or for your pride?
Her neck recoiled and she blinked her eyes.
I ask with no ill will towards your command ability. Fact remains, if you arrived without Admiral Janeway's help, you'd travel through time again, doing exactly the same thing.
Janeway accepted Mitchell's conclusion, summarizing her paradoxical circumstances.
Part of me did it for me. I won't deny that.
Catherine.
Paris's soft tone drew her attention to him.
Neither of us can presume what you've been through. But once we leave, these reports go to Starfleet Command. You realize what that means?
She pursed her lips in a stoic fashion.
Duly noted, Admiral.
Captain, you went beyond the call of duty today. Top brass should commend you both. But you know the drill, even after 7 years.
Owen elevated the mood. His humorous quip ended an intense gathering. He tucked the pad into his hip as their guests vacated their conference seats.
If there is nothing else, we'll take our leave.
Everyone agreed. This discussion ran its course, but Chakotay reminded both men of the Delta dinner. With the automatic doors sucked into the walls, Mitchell said they'd attend, but couldn't confirm what time. His aide returned from outside and collected the Admiral's pads as they exited. Catherine reclined in her chair, thinking through permutations, inconsiderate of the temporal violation. Chakotay stood in between the cooling, empty chairs.
Concerned?
About temporal investigations? My concern is for this crew. We're home, but it won't mean I'll stop caring.
The room belonged to them, but she leaned forward and lowered her voice.
What about you? You must think you're in the Viper's den.
He loosened his grasp on the headrest, and the cushioning exhaled.
I'd be lying if I said it hadn't crossed my mind. We'll have to wait and see.
Janeway held his shoulder with a firm grip.
We'll wait together, Mr. Chakotay.
He grinned, and she reminded him they can perform their flyby as soon as the admirals disembarked. He acknowledged and left the conference room. She walked to the window. Her convictions dissolved into the vacuum as she stared at the promised symbol of their return. Starfleet Command wanted more than Voyager safely home and have any passing vessel or citizen holding a camera to observe her. They preferred to announce Voyager to the rest of the Federation, to share the ending to a 70,000 light-year journey. Not since Captain Archer returned to Earth, after destroying the Zindi weapon, did Starfleet celebrate a returning crew with such fanfare. A second lone ship came back home under exceptional circumstances.
Security Chief's log. Stardate 55026.2. Pathfinder personnel have taken everything we collected from the Delta Quadrant. My department reported no breaches and performed their duties as expected. Tomorrow, Voyager will journey to Utopia Planitia for her refit.
Mr. Tuvok entered Janeway's ready room, carrying a report on Voyager's status. Catherine, engrossed in another pad, acknowledged, setting it to the side.
I'm nearly finished, thank you, Commander.
The Vulcan at attention stared at the wall. He thought it curious how her ready room lacked adornments. He sensed a change. The signature coffee smell had dissipated. Tuvok's perceptual scan drifted to Earth's presence.
I know she isn't as dry as you'd like, but not bad for a Minshara-class planet, hey?
Janeway had finished reading.
While I am fond of your homeworld, this is not my ultimate destination. When I stare out as you humans, I don't see home. I see a familiar neighborhood. I have another 17 light years.
She aligned herself to stand, facing the window with Tuvok. Her hand cupped his shoulder. Even if it meant something different to them, both officers looked at the cloud-laden blue ball.
To be honest, I forgot this isn't everyone's home. If I could grab this ship and travel to everyone's part of the quadrant, I would. I promised this crew.
Catherine considered on her lounge seat, facing away from the prize outside.
Ensign Wildman. She's traveling all the way to DS9.
Tuvok stood and raised an eyebrow. Signaling with her eyes, she pointed at the pads on her desk.
They are the last reports for the next 4 months.
Tuvok's pad rested on top. She looked across the room, intending to review it.
When you promised to return this crew home, I didn't imagine you as a chauffeur. You of all people have earned a break before we're given new assignments.
Her eyes concentrated on the rectangular devices.
I'll never settle.
That much is clear with Admiral Janeway's intervention. But let Starfleet complete the task.
Tuvok didn't register his direct hit, unknowing of Catherine's shoulders carrying the burdens distressing her counterpart. Janeway changed the subject.
Have our Pathfinder friends disembarked?
Part of her wanted to leave with Admiral Owen and embrace her mother and sister. In between all the items requiring her attention, she had made time to video chat and explain she'd transport down and be with them tomorrow.
Yes, the last transport occurred 5 minutes ago. They were surprisingly efficient.
Well, that's Admiral Mitchell for you.
Janeway rose from her relaxed position.
And I believe we're ready to break orbit.
Yes, Captain. As a precaution. I asked visitors to confine themselves to crew quarters or our mess hall.
They'll have a spectacular view either way. How do you feel about our next mission?
I appreciate this gesture, taking Voyager down to the surface. Otherwise, this is a human custom Captain, I believe you're attempting to tease me. You already know my thoughts on such rituals.
She slapped him on his shoulder, revealing a grin.
Come on, let's not keep them waiting.
He followed with a raised eyebrow. A hurried atmosphere awarded the bridge new vitality, and Catherine welcomed its ready state. Tuvok acquired tactical as Janeway received the bridge's center space. Lieutenant Paris relayed Earth stations had granted the all clear.
Tuvok, to all crew members. We're preparing to enter Earth's atmosphere. Go to Blue Alert and report to Code Blue stations.
I've plotted and laid in our descent course, Captain.
Satisfied, Janeway grabbed her chair, instructing Tom to proceed.
Let's attend our coronation, shall we?
Yes, ma'am.
Voyager shifted orbit, flying into a night sky, enveloping San Francisco. Tom's updates grew as the loudest voice on the bridge.
Atmospheric controls at standby, inertial dampeners at maximum.
Voyager's hull radiated heat, entering the upper atmosphere. She rumbled under the pressure. Outside, vibrations echoed louder than the normal background hum.
What's our status?
We're on the glide trajectory. Our altitude is 100 kilometers. Speed is 10,000 kph. I've also compensated for turbulence. A newborn baby will sleep through this.
His commander raised his voice.
For your sake, I hope that's true.
Tom pulled a face, hoping as much. Catherine moved from her armchair and steadied herself towards Tom.
Fine job, Lieutenant. But you'd think Gaia would be happy to greet us.
Voyager descended low enough beneath the West Coast skyline. The view screen displayed lights outlining San Francisco's peninsula. The illuminated outcrop contrasted against the Gulf's blackness and bay on either side.
Take us on the diagonal over Palo Alto. We'll ascend over Treasure Island.
Eyes fixed on his controls, Tom said,
Are you looking for a specific hot dog stand?
Hot dog stand? Never mind.
Janeway smiled. She knew better than to engage with Tom in early 20th century culture. She relaxed in her seat.
Did you know, Commander? 400 years ago, Captain Kirk cloaked and landed a Klingon bird of prey in Golden Gate Park?
Chakotay adjusted himself in his center, leaning closer.
No, I didn't. How did he chance upon that?
He told Starfleet he'd be bringing humpback whales.
Chakotay's face crinkled as she toyed with him and let him sit with the story for a second. He looked relieved when she said she'd tell him after. The Intrepid-class starship leveled off at an altitude of 1,000 meters, sailing over urban areas surrounded by a perfect night sky. City lights illuminated the underside of Voyager's hull as she approached. The ship's metallic skin shined like a Klingon daktang cutting through the sky.
Tom, slow our speed to 500 meters per second. Let's give everyone a good look at us.
Lieutenant Paris tapped his controls.
How close do you want to cross the span? Closer than Kirk?
Closer than Kirk,
came the assured reply. Crowds lined up, witnessing the most remarkable ship in the fleet. From their point of view, losing Voyager became a minor tragedy, turning into a triumph. Its re-emergence represented the Federation's perseverance and resolve. 2 years ago, the Federation won the Dominion War. Today, a lone starship completed a journey unfathomable for people to comprehend. Onlookers collected together near the shoreline to catch a glimpse. The most advantaged, those with the closest view, stood shoulder to shoulder on San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge. District authorities arranged for anti-matter fireworks. Their explosions ignited around the starship as she neared. The light show lasted longer than the actual maneuver. Voyager displayed her presence measured in seconds, arriving on time at the celebration's climax. If anybody blinked, they'd miss this moment. Luckily, there were enough cameras recording the event. Voyager's thrusters and vibrant elation rocked the city. People cheered and waved as the craft approached. Voyager descended, slowing on approach towards the greatest symbol of early human engineering. Tom considered this his one chance. The Golden Gate's bridge and twin towers rumbled under the breath of thruster engines and launched her through the cloud cover into orbit. Catherine, from her chair, announced to her helmsman,
Tom, that was a little too close.
Tom opened the blanket on his side of the bed. Medical clearance allowed Belana to move to their quarters. She opened her eyes as his weight squeezed the mattress.
Aren't you going to the Delta dinner?
You're tired, right? I'll stay here with you. Also, my dad mentioned we can live in his house.
That's nice.
Well, he's a nice person.
That's a sudden change from you.
Well, he changed.
Tired eyes held enough strength to question his words. He leaned on his side to convince her.
First contact went right. I'm sure about him as I am about you.
Tom kissed her head and relaxed on his mattress for the last time. Miral slept on Belana's chest. Before dozing off, he murmured how the Delta dinner would be a couple of speeches and they wouldn't miss much.
For outstanding services as operations officer, it's my utmost pleasure to grant the rank of full lieutenant. Congratulations, Lieutenant Harry Kim.
Crew members and families attending laughed and shared applause as his collar accommodated a second pip. Catherine waited for the noise to quieten.
It's long overdue, I'll admit. And if the promotion wasn't today, it would be never.
She raised her hand and lowered her voice.
And I'm on shore leave tomorrow.
Harry's efforts these past 7 years caught up to him. He stood dazed in the presence of everyone. He focused on smiling, thanking his captain, and listened, embarrassed as Janeway thought about when she met the bright-faced ensign. She shared a story with how he nearly broke his back in her ready room, forcing himself to attention. She repeated the line to him again.
Mr. Kim, at ease before you sprain something.
Harry noticed himself repeating his error. He smiled and relaxed. His captain timed his promotion well. His parents and a journalist from the Federation News Service stood on the periphery of those assembled. The celebration hosted a group of Starfleet personnel, three ambassadors, and San Francisco City officials. Harry spied Reg and O'Brien clapping as his eyes focused on his elders standing by the mess hall windows. A tear skated across his cheek upon glimpsing at his mum and dad contrasted against Earth. Now would have been appropriate for the doctor to digitize this mental picture for him. He had returned home, and in style. Tom informed Harry he and Bellana wouldn't attend. He excused his friends because nobody knew about the promotion. Commander Chakotay shared his first meeting of Harry, in Voyager's sickbay, while he suffered from a deadly disease. He made light of the fact, but also praised Mr. Kim's against-the-odds optimism throughout their 7-year journey. Janeway stepped forward.
One last thing, ladies and gentlemen. I'd also like to give a huge thanks to Crewman Chell, our resident chef these past few months. He's created a fine selection of food.
The Delta dinner involved drinks and speeches in the mess hall. Chell's catering assistants converted the cargo bay into a food hall so as to accommodate everyone. More applause filled the room, acknowledging the chef as he helped himself to deliver the speech he found time to write. He conformed to how Bolians didn't sense intimidation with public speaking. With attention diverted away from Harry, he joined his parents by the window.
This is the finest present we could receive. We're so relieved.
Mary Kim said, her face full of tears.
Of course, your mother and I are very...
The best part is you have plenty of time to visit family.
Mary interrupted.
Mom, you made plans for me already?
Can you blame us? We're so excited.
I was going to say that.
John Kim added.
And more people need to know.
Janeway halted Chell's speech with her own announcement. She saved the crowd, patting him on the shoulder.
Don't hold back on those canapes. Thank you again, Chell.
As crew and guests left for the cargo bay, Janeway's communicator chirped. Mr. Ayala informed her Admiral Patterson was en route. His ETA, 10 minutes.
Good.
She relished her chance to share a pop quiz and told Chakotay she'd like him to accompany her.
There's always one more official duty. His timing is impeccable.
He grinned, ready to exit, but Harry's parents caught their son's captain's attention. They thanked both commanding officers for bringing back their only child. Chakotay shook hands. As emotions subsided, Harry comforted them, with Chell offering to escort the Kim family to the dinner. Chell finished his escort duty, instructing the Kims on which foods to try first. Harry said he'd take it from here. The blue chef jumped in front of Miles O'Brien, holding a plate of something the Bolian told him was the closest thing to mutton. O'Brien didn't talk, but mustered agreeable sounds as he ate. Chell proceeded to explain how Federation starships inside the last century phased out civilian caterers.
You'd have to serve on a Constitution class to work in a kitchen.
Miles swallowed his mouthful and informed him his mother cooked real family meals. They exchanged a smile, acknowledging their love for authentic food.
This is good.
Lieutenant Barclay stood nearby, unbeknownst to Chell, hesitating to sample his offerings. He satisfied himself with drinks, talking to his holographic companion and Seven about recent advances in medicine.
We should arrange a trip to Starfleet Medical. I'm sure they are dying to meet you.
The doctor rolled his eyes.
Huh, it's a shame none of them are dying to be here.
Well, they're probably busy.
Too busy to meet the foremost doctor from the Delta Quadrant.
I have no answer for that.
Barclay shrugged, turning his attention to Seven.
Seven, what will you do?
Assist with Voyager's refit. They will require my expertise.
Come now, Seven. There's more to life than Voyager.
The doctor stressed, setting aside his own concerns.
Yes, don't you have family?
Reg pointed, holding his drink.
I have an aunt on Earth.
With an encouraging smile and raised brows to make his point,
The hologram said,
So, wouldn't it be prudent to visit her first, before traveling to Mars?
I suppose so.
He placed an encouraging hand on Seven's arm.
Seven, you're ready to leave this ship. It will be fine on Earth.
I know, Doctor. I've already contacted my aunt, and we'll visit tomorrow before the refit begins.
She feigned anxiety, trapping both men. She saluted with her cake, eating a piece. The EMH, with a reluctant gesture, toasted to her game. The dinner celebrated arrivals, but also departures. Crewman Mortimer Harron had accepted an offer from the Institute of Cosmology. Nobody expressed surprise towards the selectively ambitious man. Tuvok engaged lecturers from Starfleet Academy. Admiral Paris asked faculty staff to attend to meet and accept Icheb's entry into the institution. The USS Sovereign entered orbit, placing itself in a parallel trajectory above Voyager. Longer and sleeker than the Intrepid class, Sovereign-class starships are the new top-of-the-line vessels, a considerable advancement over previous, though still prestigious, Galaxy class. The Sovereign dwarfed Voyager, as planet Earth did to Mercury. This class of ship served in deep space exploration and first contact missions. The USS Sovereign, stationed at Utopia Planitia, served as a test vehicle for new technologies. Today's assignment, to ferry an admiral, the Endeavour was a simple trip around the block. Doors to Transporter Room 1 swished open as Captain and First Officer entered.
Have you ever met Admiral Patterson?
No, but I've heard of him.
He's a lot more huggable than people know.
I'll take your word for it.
Chakotay grinned at the mental image as they entered the transporter room.
Do you think he's brought coffee?
Who knows? Though being honest, I'm tense. It's been so long.
She placed her hand on her stomach.
Do you have your pop quiz questions ready?
She wagged her finger.
Only the easy ones.
Receiving coordinates now, sir. Admiral Patterson is requesting permission to beam aboard.
Informed the transporter chief.
Permission is certainly granted.
Janeway held her stomach again, trying to quell the anticipation as molecules glowed and vanished. The transporter pad captured the third personal welcome of an admiral. Theodoric Patterson, shorter and plumper in stature to Owen Paris, exhibiting a polished, whitened beard. He oversaw Starfleet's ship construction programs. Catherine noted he looked older than expected, and his posture appeared rigid. His arms behind his back held something.
You're late,
Janeway remarked.
What is...
Never mind that for now, Katie.
Patterson's abruptness cleared the room of expected pleasantries.
I regret to be the one to inform you. You are hereby relieved of command. You're to face a general court-martial. Details are here.
Janeway's face flushed as Patterson thrusted a pad into her hands. He addressed her executive officer.
Commander Chakotay, all Mackey crew members are to be discharged from active service. Their rank and security privileges are abrogated. As of this moment, Voyager is under my command.
If you enjoyed listening, please tell a fellow Trekkie, leave a review or a star rating. If you'd like to be a Patreon for just $2 a month for early access to episodes, exclusive extras, or just contact me, check the show notes for more information.